Fangoria is back. Resurrected just in time for this Halloween, the magazine that set the standard is coming back as a deluxe 100-page quarterly edition. You'll see some familiar names like Michael Gingold and Tony Timpone, and you'll see bylines that will leave your jaw on the floor. Set visits, deep dives, new discoveries, fiction and exclusive artwork, and minimal ads, all printed on collectible-grade paper stock that reimagines the classic magazine for a 2018 audience. Specific contents are being kept under wraps for now because Fangoria wants you to experience true analog nostalgia when you open that black poly bag and see what's inside for the very first time. But it's not just a magazine anymore. Fangoria is also bringing you novels under its Fangoria Presents label, both Our Lady of the Inferno by Preston Fossil and My Pet Serial Killer by Michael Seidlinger arrive this September. Fango is also getting in the movie biz. Fangoria will be bringing you some amazing gnarly horror movies starting this August. That's when Puppet Master The Littlest Rites drops, starring Thomas Lennon, Barbara Crampton, Udo Kier, and Michael Parr, with effects by the great Tate Steinsick. This reboot is nasty, hilarious, and super gory. It's been blowing minds at film fests all year and will be hitting theaters and VOD on August 17th. Next year, Fango will be bringing to life the Grady Hendrix script Satanic Panic and a reimagining of Castle Freak. But it all starts with the mag. So head over to Fangoria.com, where you will find the most non-website-looking website ever, and subscribe to Fangoria. New issues drop in October, January, April, and July. A subscription is $60 and will save you about $20 off the cover price. That's Fangoria.com. Subscribe now. Today's episode of Shockwaves is sponsored by Diabolik DVD, featuring demented discs from all over the world. Check them out online at www.diabolikdvd.com. They are the number one source for horror, cult, and strange films from around the world. The company is Movie Buff owned and operated. If you are looking for rare, unique, and strange films, then you need to head over to Diabolik DVD. They're constantly updating their inventory and have plenty of movies that you won't find anywhere else. They recently revamped their website, and ordering has never been easy. Right now, Diabolik has a sale on all Doppelganger label titles going on through the end of July. They also have all the Vestron titles, including the brand new Beyond Reanimator and Dagon releases. Plus, they've got Severin's limited edition Blu-ray release of The Changeling. They also have tons of titles from Agfa, Code Red, Scorpion Releasing, Arrow Video, Vinegar Syndrome, and much more. The Shockwaves team loves them, so head over to Diabolik DVD now. That's www.diabolikdvd.com or find them on Facebook. Shockwaves is also thrilled to announce that we're going to be at Midsummer Scream Convention in Long Beach on July 28th and 29th. We'll be doing a live show there with the amazing Tom Holland on the 29th. Plus, there are actual haunts, walkthrough setup, slashback video returns, Dead Right horror trivia, some amazing celebrity guests, and much more. For info, please head to midsummerscream.org, and we hope to see you in Long Beach, California. And welcome to the live episode of Shockwaves from Mad Monster Party, Arizona. This is a small but devoted group of people, and I really appreciate that. If my co-hosts were here, which they're not, and I'm going to give them shit for that right now, live in front of people, then I wouldn't have these lovely ladies next to me. Thank you to Felissa Rose and Amanda Weiss for jumping on to do the Shockwaves with me.
Thank you for having us. We love you.
And if you're unfamiliar with the podcast, it's a weekly horror talk show podcast from Blumhouse Productions. You can find it on iTunes. And basically, it's myself, Rob Galuzzo, and I have a history in horror. I've written for Fangoria, FearNet, the Blumhouse website. Ryan Turek, who was also at Fangoria and now works at Blumhouse Productions. He produced this little movie called Halloween that's coming out later this year. Rebecca McKendry and Elric Kane. And basically every week we get together, we talk about movies we've seen, we recommend stuff, and we bring on different people from the horror industry to kind of tell us a little bit about their experiences and just have kind of a candid conversation. And thankfully, I go way back with the two lovely ladies to my left, so this should be fun and candid. Hopefully you'll hear some shit that you've never heard before. I hope.
And Felissa got us drinks, so this could go either way. So part of what I wanted to start with is, because we're at a convention, the convention experience. Because what I think is really cool is so many different... You were both in films that were very indelible. Most of us saw them at young ages and never forgot them. And so I'm sure you get tons of stories. I have my own, which I'll share in a few minutes. But for starters, what was that movie for the two of you? Because you both started kind of acting fairly young, and so you know the insides of the movie industry. But was there a movie, that a horror movie, that scared you or is equal to what people come up to you and say, like, when I first saw Sleepaway Camp, when I first saw Nightmare on Elm Street, what's that movie for the two of you?
Mine's Jaws. Because I grew up in a small beach town. I was a surfer girl. And my older sister, I have a sister that's quite a bit older. She won't listen to this. She will not think that's nice that I said that. But her friend took my little sister and I to see Jaws without asking our parents. And I literally climbed on top of him and was hiding behind his head. I've never been so scared. Never, ever went surfing again. Never jumped off my dad's boat anywhere where we were out, and I'd spent my whole life in the ocean, and even now, if I'm swimming in a pool at night, I hear that music in my head.
Hey, do you remember how old you were when you first saw Jaws?
13.
13? Have you watched the sequels?
Nope. But I do watch, I used to memorize the monologue in the boat about that, Robert Shaw. Did. And but I do watch that movie repeatedly. I'm obsessed with how much it scares me.
And it still holds up. I watch it like once a year, and it's one of my five perfect movies.
Yeah. And what I say about it is I went into that movie as one person and left as a completely different person. Like, it changed my biology. It changed how I spent my time after that. Like, nothing else has ever affected me like that.
Yeah. And Felissa, I think your answer is going to be tied into the book that you're here promoting.
Yes.
Which is called what again?
Okay. My favorite horror movie book is an amazing compilation edited and put together by our dear friend Christian Ackerman, who I so dearly love, and so many great friends are a part of it. And there are essays in the book about the horror movie that affected us the most. So I do have a little passage in the book, and my movie is the original, I have to state that, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And that movie always, until up to this moment, has affected me so greatly, whether it's just watching it, I really felt taken in by that film, like completely, all of my senses were like flooded with this craziness when I first saw it, the acting, just the visuals. It was just such a spectacular experience. That's what I can say about the movie. It took me over, and I was never the same again, because I loved Marilyn Burns' performance, and I felt like that inspired me to want to achieve, although I never could, but her performance was on that level of like, holy shit. And I was always in love with her. And I did have, I was fortunate that one day I did get to interview her. And I think I just sat and stared at her for about 30 minutes before I spoke. So she was like, all right, who's the creeper? But it was beautiful. It was a great experience, and I'll never forget that movie, just everything. The newspaper ad, the cast, the story, Gunner, may he rest in peace, everything about it was perfection for me.
Yeah, and that's another one that I revisit every year, and it always holds up really well. But you were, so how old were you when you did Sleepaway Camp, and did you see it? You saw it after you made a horror movie, right?
Yes. I saw the ad before I saw the movie, and I made Sleepaway Camp in 1982, terrified by horror movies. And then once I made Sleepaway Camp, I felt like, you know, great affection for this beautiful art. You know, the genre was just like amazing to me. And
we all understand.
I know. Should I spell it out? No. And then I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it was at that point that I thought, okay, I'm a huge fan now, and not only do I want to watch all of these movies, but I want to be in all of these movies and meet all of these fascinating people.
Excellent. At what point, because again, you both were in kind of quintessential 80s horror movies, at what point did you realize how big your respective movie was? Because I think for Felicia it's much later when there were reunions and stuff. But Amanda... No, not yesterday. But for Amanda, I mean, Freddy was a big hit right away. And they started making sequels pretty much every year.
Yeah.
So for you, when did you realize it was bigger than what, than just this little horror movie? And how did that affect your life personally?
The first Halloween after the movie came out, so it might have been the following year, I was at my mom's house handing out candy to all the kids, and like five Freddies came up. And I went, oh my gosh. And so I actually said to one of the kids, you know, I'm Tina in the movie. He goes, no, you're not. I'm like, no, I'm Tina in the movie. He's like, no, you're not. It's like, I really am. I'm arguing with an eight-year-old. But I think we knew pretty quickly that people loved Robert, that he was able to create a monster, really, but that was so empathetic and human-like in so many ways that you could identify with him even as the killer. And I think that, he's a brilliant actor, and I think he was able to really create like a Shakespearean villain that I think resonated with people.
Did you sense while making that film that you were working, like people like Robert and Wes Craven are just like, you just kind of can't believe they exist because of how imaginative they are and what they bring to their characters. I mean, while you're making it, you're young, you're all having fun, you're working with some guy named Johnny Depp, you know, whatever. Did you get a sense while making it that it might have been something special?
You know what? I didn't, but not because it didn't warrant that. I just didn't know. I was young, and I think I was just out of drama school, and I was just, I don't think I understood what to expect from making a movie, and you know, or what would happen afterwards. So I didn't. But I've been on panels with both Robert and Ronnie Blakely, and they both are like, I knew. So I just wasn't savvy enough, and I was, you know, I don't know. I wasn't business savvy.
Felicia just asked if she could ask a question. Yes, that's how the podcast works. It's a casual conversation.
I just want to say I can't even believe I'm up here with both of you and Amanda. You know how I feel about you.
Returned.
Were you close? Like, you know, when we're making movies, it's like everybody's a family, the whole entire cast and crew. And were you all really, like, tight? And
Are you trying to get dirt on Johnny Depp? Is that
right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what?
Because the women bond a lot.
We really do on sets. That's true. I think we really do. And I found, first of all, when I auditioned for the movie, everybody auditioned for the role of Nancy. And at the callbacks, I got called back for the character of Tina. But I actually, on the callback, read with Heather. And then Wes had us do an improv. And he brought in Johnny and Jesu. And then just told us all in the room that we had the part. So I think he kind of, just from our original auditions, knew. Anyway, that's a long point to get to. Heather and I were very close right from the get-go, and we're still friends. In fact, everybody from our movie is still friends. It's very strange. Doesn't happen all the time. I did two movies back-to-back. I did Nightmare on Elm Street and then Bedrock Dead. And both those movies...
Well, we'll get to that.
But the thing is that both those movies were all still friends. And I call them like my college years movies, like they're my college friends or something.
Which is rare, because, I mean, it's for anybody out there, you work a job for a couple of years, do you still talk to, like, everybody from that job you did in high school? Not really. So that's kind of special that you get to stay in touch. And Felicia, you kind of left the business after the original Sleepaway Camp, but I think your first inkling of its success was that Fangoria reunion, right?
Yes.
Which was, what, 2000?
2001.
Really? That early?
Yeah, 2001.
Great.
Yeah, 17 years ago.
So what happened? You were contacted out of the blue, and somebody
was doing
it. We knew nothing.
It was bullshit. It was like, Sleepaway, what? You know, it was like, we made a movie in upstate New York, and we just thought, oh, this was fun, and we were all a family. It was actually the crew from Creepshow who came over to crew Sleepaway Camp.
Oh, that's so
same
cool.
Same crew. Little trivia.
Yeah.
The cast and I, especially the women, Kathy Comey, who was on All My Children, and Karen Fields, who played uber bitch Judy, who I simply love and adore, one of the sweetest people on the planet. So funny that you please that bitch.
He's like the greatest 80s bitch in slasher history.
With, I know, with the side going to... like all that, you know. Oh, she was so great. But she, the three of us were like best girlfriends. And then we left and said, see you, bye. And that was the end of us. We were like nowhere to be found. No idea.
Like what? Sounds like regular camp.
Sounds like camp. Yeah, we all made out and then we said goodbye. We smoked the pot.
Can I ask you a question? How long did you not act and what brought you back?
You know, I was just in New York at a dancing school, and I got called in to audition for the movie. And Robert Hiltzik was doing his, I think it was like his thesis, Sleepaway Camp, the script. And then he went on to make it a feature film. And I was just acting like kind of a goofy kid. I didn't know it would become a sort of a professional thing, because Sleepaway Camp did earn me like the Screen Actors Guild card. So, yeah, then I made the movie and I didn't act anymore. I went back to eighth grade and I went to junior high and high school, and then I decided I'd go to college and study acting because I did love it and I missed it. So that's how I sort of went back.
Did anyone from high school see you in that movie?
Everyone in my high school saw me.
So was it complicated getting a date after the
end? It's still complicated.
Come on.
In fact, let me stand up and show you what. No. No, it was definitely provocative. Sleepaway Camp had a lot of undertones. Some people got it. Some people were kind of confused. And I think certainly for 8th, 9th, 10th graders, they were like, wait, what? So they were intrigued. They didn't give me shit. They weren't mean. But some girls were, and I was like, fuck off. But for the most, because I did have that Angela gave me that ability to feel like, I might take a curling iron to you if you're mean. But for the most part, no, everyone was kind and thought it was cool. And then, you know, I sort of went to school. I did go to school and sort of found my way back into the horror genre.
Okay. So you had a big reunion in 2001. But Amanda, when did the reunions and the convention circuit kind of start and come into your life? Because after Nightmare and Better Off Dead, you were acting for a while. And this wasn't a thing in the 80s. Yeah. It took much longer for kind of horror culture to catch up to the convention. So do you remember the first time you were asked to do one of these kind of events?
Yeah, actually, Heather and Robert called me and said, hey, you know, we've been doing these conventions, and we think you should come with us to one. And I was like outdoor conventions? Like, I was thinking, like, my dad used to take us to, like, RV conventions, and you'd look at RVs and stuff. So I was, like, literally thinking that they'd gone to, like, an outdoor camping convention and were, like, selling pictures or something. I was very confused. They're like, no, it's a horror convention. And I was like, all right. So I did, the first one I did, I think, was in 2000 at Cherry Hill or someplace, and it was amazing.
It's probably Chiller.
Chiller, right? Yeah, I think it was Chiller. Yeah. It was really great. It was neat. And I had no idea that people loved that movie so much. I just didn't know until then. And I find it really humbling and overwhelming sometimes. And I have to struggle with the level of deservingness of it, you know? Because I'm really taken by people's emotion for it.
Yes. We are, as horror fans, we are very sensitive folk. Whether we want to admit it or not. And actually, I'm going to... Because I want to know... you guys probably hear incredible stories from fans all the time. And so I will throw myself under the bus and share with you guys the first stories I shared with them. So with Amanda, I met you for the first time at Dark Delicacies, which is a great bookstore in Los Angeles. And totally true story. At 10 years old, my older cousins... I loved the Universal Monster movies, but I had never seen a real horror movie. My older cousins tortured me by telling me that Freddy was going to come get me, and I had no idea what they were talking about, you know, all out of context. Finally, one night on a sleepover, they made me watch Nightmare on Elm Street. I was so upset by your death that they immediately put on Better Off Dead to prove to me that you're still alive. They're like, Tina's fine, she's breaking John Cusack's heart here, it's going to be all right. And so they inadvertently created a monster, because the two things I'm obsessed with now are horror and 80s comedies. And I remember I told you that story, and you were practically tearing up as you were now.
Yeah.
And said, that is the best story anyone's ever told me.
It is. That's just fantastic. And I know it makes me cry. I don't know why.
And side story, because he's probably not listening, but one of the first people I stalked, and I don't encourage stalking, in Los Angeles was Savage Steve Holland, the writer-director of Better Off Dead.
And he's the best.
Thankfully, he did not get a restraining order. We're good buddies to this day. And we talk about you all the time.
Oh, and I talk about you to him because we both love you.
How crazy is that? It's ridiculous. Yeah. And Felissa, I think we met in Chicago the very first Flashback weekend.
The very first.
Right, because the Sleepaway Camp reunion happened in New York at Fangoria, and it sold out. It was one of the only times I remember, you know, back in those days, you could just hop on the train, go to Fangoria, buy your ticket at the door. That was the first convention I've ever gotten turned away from, and it was because of how huge the Sleepaway Camp reunion was.
We were like, what? They want to see us? Because the entire cast
was there. Well, I think it was the one and only time that... It was all of you, right? Like, that was the one and only time that it was the entire cast. Yeah. It was pretty crazy.
It was the whole New York cast, and we were all like, what do you mean they want to talk to us? Like, you mean even Gene Saladino? Like,
we were the most New York cast.
Right? Still are.
It's like the cast of The Sopranos. They're doing Sleepaway Camp.
Everybody in Sleepaway Camp went on to be The Sopranos. Well, actually, that's funny, because
Vincent Pastore, who's one of my dear friends who played Big Pussy in The Sopranos, he actually stars in Return to Sleepaway Camp. And, yeah, so that's just another...
Good trivia.
I think, by the way, I'm going to be bold horror statement. I think Return to Sleepaway Camp gets a bad rep. I think it's actually a pretty wacky, crazy, ridiculous, over-the-top, amazing movie in the same way that the original is. Because I remember watching it, and, you know, the reviews are mixed on that one, but my friend was like, this is no different than the original. He's like, let me show you something. Put on the original, it's like, kids are just as obnoxious, they're just as mean, maybe it doesn't have as classy a score as the original, but otherwise, it's pretty much the same movie, so.
Yeah, it's some great kills in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, spoiler, but I'm in it, and I play a really fucking cool man.
I don't
have a dick and all in that one.
I don't.
Awesome.
I'm sorry. I don't buy you as a man.
Amanda
at
is the
all.
Class act. I am the trash act.
Oh, that is so not true. That is not true.
I'm sorry. I don't buy you as a man at all, but that's okay. So what are some of the, you know, when you started, because now you guys are pretty prominent in the convention circuit, you know, what are some of the kind of most memorable stories that people have come and told you? Because again, we are a sensitive lot, and these movies affect us very deeply. And again, for you guys, it was, you know, whatever it was, a couple of weeks working on this film that has kind of changed the course of almost everybody in this room's life because of how much they loved it. So what are some of the people that have come up to you and stories you've heard that have kind of stood out? No pressure.
You know, especially because people really liked Nancy and Tina as friends, and of course Heather to a huge degree, because so many young girls identified with her strength and had told her wonderful stories about how that emboldened them and filled them with the opportunity to be stronger in the world. I find that people... Some of the stories I've heard that I'm deeply affected by, for some reason, people like have found a lot of strength in that movie, and people that have thought about possibly killing themselves or feeling unloved. And I hear a lot of really sad stories, but that in that movie we became their friends, and that got them over whatever their trials and tribulations were that had made them feel so badly about themselves. And I feel honored that I was a part of anything that would help someone. And it was unexpected for me that it would be in a horror film, that people that I in any way could ever help another human. That makes me feel so amazing. And I I don't know. Now I'm rambling. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I just feel really fortunate that I get to hear the stories and treasure them and give that energy back, and that people that have loved something I've done so much, that I feel really honored, and I don't use that word lightly. So those are mostly the stories. I hear a lot of very sad stories, and I feel like I was put here because I can handle that, and I can take it in, and I can give back love. And I feel really...
Felicia's getting emotional by your speech.
I just feel really lucky that I get to do that.
Aww.
That's why I love her, because she's all heart.
All heart.
I mean, it's spectacular to see someone so genuine and so giving of themselves.
Well, Felicia, what stories have you heard other than confused sexuality?
Shit, I have shit stories. Stories about my dick, all right?
You get a lot of dick stories.
To be clear, that was not your dick.
People love you so much.
So Joe Bob had a drive-in marathon this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Hashtag deformed dick is what started trending with him. I was like, thank you. I love you too, Joe Bob.
How did that go over? Because obviously we've been here, so I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. But I love Joe Bob. He's a really smart and funny character. So he showed Sleepaway Camp as part of it. Because they kept it a secret, the marathon.
Yeah, the marathon was a secret. And I was there. I was interviewed right before I got there.
That's so awesome.
So that was unbelievable when he called me and said, hey, I want you to come and be a part of this Shudder secret marathon. I thought, oh my gosh, get out. Really?
That's so
okay.
Cool.
Yeah. So I put on my hot pink heels and my glitter dress, and I sat my big ass in the chair and talked all about Sleepaway Camp. And it was so fun because he is incredibly charming and witty and smart and knows everything about film you ever wanted to know. I mean, it's like beyond crazy. But yeah, so, but getting back to, yes, Joe Bob is amazing. I'm so thrilled to have been a part of that. And my thing is, people tell me all the time that they had their baby was conceived while watching Sleepaway Camp.
Ooh.
When I tell you, if I had a dollar every time someone told me, and I'm there like, hey, nice to meet you. Oh, okay.
I'm literally like,
not make it up.
What in that movie makes people want to fuck?
The baseball scene.
Those short shorts. Wow.
That you win. That is winner winner chicken dinner right there.
Clear. Amanda and I are here for the connection. We love and we're so grateful to be here. I know I can speak for the both of us that we can't even believe that, you know, we're so thankful. We can't believe we're here. But on a deeper note, for me, it's more about bullying. And that is a serious subject, and I do take that very seriously, having played Angela, and my husband was severely bullied. He's very open about it. It was a tragedy in his childhood, and I think we came together because of that. He loved Angela. He related, and it's not okay, and I hope that, you know, it helped in some way to see, not kill somebody, but just the idea that someone got vengeance in entertainment form, you know. But so I hope that I get to speak with a lot. I have the opportunity to speak with a lot of people about the bullying, and I hope I've touched someone because we connect on that. And I'm all about the hugs, and if you ever need a hug or need to talk to someone, I'd love to, you know, tell you that I'm here for you and I understand. And we're all in this together.
Bless you. You're a beautiful soul. Now, I've got a fun story. I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but it plays into what you just said, which is I had a very prominent horror director friend who came to me and said, I'm going in because they want me to pitch potentially a remake of Sleepaway Camp. And I know you love these movies. What should I do? And I was like, you know what? The modern version of Sleepaway Camp now, if you have to do it, first answer is don't remake it, but if you have to, you should make it about online bullying now. Like if it was a girl that some video leaked out and everybody made fun of her and then she goes to camp, like that's your modern take on how to do Sleepaway Camp these days.
So you're writing it, right?
let's work it out.
Yeah, I have the meeting on Wednesday, so I'll have to call you.
If you're still trying to remake it. But no, I think that's the thing, and I it's funny because I never thought of it, but I really do think that that's what resonates about that movie, is the aspect of bullying, and kind of you kind of relate to one character in that movie, whether you're the one being bullied, or if you're Ricky, the cousin, that's trying to protect you, so that's interesting. Both of you have worked a lot over the years, the last several years in general, and I'm just curious if there's one movie or role that you've done that you're really proud of that not enough people have seen. So basically, I want to know what you've done recently that you think everybody here should check out that they haven't had the opportunity to check out yet.
Such a nice question. No, it is, because most people don't ask that. I like the way you ask that. Well, the role as an adult that I'm most proud of is a movie I did that came out 2 years ago called The Id. And it's like the id, the ego, the superego, and I love this movie. It's just a little low-budget film, but it came out really well, and it's very disturbing and filled with dread. And it's kind of like a cross between Telltale Heart and Whatever Happened to Baby Chang. And I'm super proud of this movie, and I would love it if people would see it and let me know what you think of it. And it's streaming on Amazon Prime right now.
Right. Yeah, The Id, and it's directed by Tommy Hudson, who was one of the many people involved with Never Sleep Again,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's got some good cred to it.
Yeah,
for
it
sure.
Does. It has some good people.
All right, Felicia, what are you going to pimp? I know there's a dozen things you could pimp right now.
Well, I'm a whore. See, a trashy whore.
One movie that I'm proud of that everybody hates, but I'll just say it anyway, is called Satan's Playground, that I made with a new Jersey filmmaker, Dante Tomaselli.
Very Jersey. I actually love this movie. Dante doesn't get a good enough rap. He's a surrealist, if you will. Most of his movies don't make narrative sense, but they're very Argento-esque. And so I know Dante Tomaselli's first movie, Desecration, just got re-released on Blu-ray, I think through Code Red. And then his second movie was called Horror, which you had a bit part in.
Yes.
Actually, I think that might have been your return to acting role.
Yes,
first
it was.
Time
yes, yeah.
And then you're kind of one of the leads of Satan's Playground.
With Ellen Sandweiss from The Evil Dead, she plays my sister. And so that was really fun. And Ed Neal tortures me in that movie, and I love Ed because Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I'm going to watch this one. I didn't know this one.
Yeah, I think Edgar Bay put out a DVD of it, which I think is still available.
I don't know, it's many years ago. It's like 16, 17 years ago, but I love it. It was so fun to make. We had a ball, like all of us, just a big love fest. Recently I made a movie called Garlic and Gunpowder, and the reason I like that is because I play the 350-pound mob boss, named Ma! And so I finally have like a little bit of humor, a little, you know.
I saw this movie. She's amazing in it. She's so funny. I highly recommend watching if you get the chance. You really are great.
No, because it's so liberating to not worry about like your hair and makeup and all that stupid bullshit that, you know, you do worry about when you're in front of a fucking digital. But I get to be Ma, and she's ridiculous, and I really had a blast making that. So.
Right. And you know what? I want to bring up Victor Crowley, the fourth Hatchet movie.
Oh, my God, I'm the biggest asshole ever, because truthfully,
and there's
thank
some applause
you.
There you go.
I love Victor Crowley, and truthfully, that is my favorite part. And I love Adam Green, and when he called me, I legitimately like got on my hands and knees and started crying, because he's like, well, I wrote this part in like my new movie, and I'm like, wait,
it was obviously written for you. I'm sure.
You can't tell anyone. You have to sign something. Okay, it's the new Hatchet movie, and I went into like I don't know what. I was out of body experience, and he said, and I wrote Kathleen for you. Oh, okay, it doesn't matter that she's like a drunk, pilled out New York lunatic. I thought, holy shit, this is the best thing ever. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone who saw it, thank you. And I get killed by Kane.
Kane Hodder, and quite a death you get in that movie. No spoilers, but you know, if you haven't seen
Spoiler
the trailer, it's pretty.
My genitalia's in it again.
Yes. There you go. I thought that was really cool because I respect Adam a lot and I like what he's been able to do with the Hatchet franchise. And I had heard rumblings that he had secretly made the fourth film.
Did you hear that?
Maybe my roommate told you that you were in it. Maybe.
Dave!
But what was really special was, you know, Adam had done a 10th anniversary screening in Los Angeles. It was billed as a 10th anniversary of Hatchet. And so whole audience, it was, you know, friends and family, but also like a whole audience of fans. And he announced right before they started that it was a new Hatchet movie. And it was pretty, in today's day and age with the internet, it was pretty special to hear how nuts that crowd went, knowing that they're about to see a brand new Hatchet movie. So, super cool. And I thought you were great at it. So
thank you. Caroline Williams is one of my dear friends, and she said to me a few days before, hey, so, like, kind of look nice for this Hatchet thing, because I heard there's a new Hatchet.
Ah, so you know you're in it?
She goes, I don't fucking know who's in that one, but there's something going on. I said, oh, really? And as soon as we saw it, and I came on the screen, she, like, came and punched my chair and said, you bitch! I love that.
That sounds like that one. So, awkward question, but what is your favorite sequel of your respective franchise? What is your favorite Nightmare on Elm Street sequel, and what is your favorite sequel account, pending you've seen them?
Okay.
And if you haven't, I'd like to make recommendations.
Okay. I've only seen the first one. I've only seen the one Tether's in, because she's my friend.
Yes,
but I love the new Nightmare. I think that's fantastic. It's so meta and great, and I think Heather and Robert are brilliant in it, and I love how they brought the story into modern time, and I think that, and it was nice to see Wes's signature all over it again, so I would say that's my favorite.
You know, Wes has always been ahead of the curve, and with that movie, New Nightmare paved the way for Scream, quite frankly,
yes.
The whole meta nature of it, and even now, I haven't seen Scream 4 since it came out in the theaters. But it could not be more relevant, the idea of trying to be a social media star. So he was way ahead on that one, too.
Yeah.
So I got to go back and watch Scream 4.
Yeah.
Felissa. And you were asked to do 2 and 3. Is that true?
I did, yeah. I went and met with Michael Simpson, and I sucked. Like, they gave me the script, and they said, here, read the new Angela. And she was hilarious and awesome, and I fucking didn't have... I had no idea how to read this character. To me, Angela was the Angela I had done. So I thought, okay, well, thank you so much. I know I screwed up here. So good luck with the movie. And he was good friends with Pamela Springsteen from Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Right.
So he said, well, what do you think? And I said, no, I had just gotten into college. I kind of want to go there. I know I'm not going to be good at this part. And he, you know, had her in mind, so he cast her. And so part two is my favorite because I love Pamela Springsteen and I would do anything to meet her.
I love her too. She's so nice. Cause
she
know,
a friend of yours?
I knew her because we were in Fast Times together.
Hello!
All right, we're going to talk.
But she's amazing and she's a brilliant photographer now.
We need to, because I hear she shied away from these movies, but at least behind the scenes, we need to make sure that Felissa meets her.
And Kelly Maroney is friends with her too. You were all friends from that movie.
Yeah.
I want her to know how much we love her in those movies. Can we
call her? Can we FaceTime her right now?
Yeah, Steve, break out your phone. Let's make this, you know.
I know.
Okay, it's on my to-do list.
Yeah. Right. Do you talk to her now?
No. I haven't seen her in a long time, but...
Was she engaged to Sean Penn? Because I heard that she was, and Kelly Maroney was even a bridesmaid.
It's on a 3:15.
Yes.
Whoa.
Hey, you heard it here on
Shockwave. Don't say that I said so.
This is going out publicly. Do you both keep up with modern horror? I think, Felissa, you talk about it pretty regularly. But, like, I mean, I think that's the interesting thing, especially with our show, is people love to hear the recommendations, what's interesting, what's new, what's going to be different. And so I'm just curious, just based on the people you meet at the conventions, if, like, do you keep up on modern horror?
I do. I mean, I haven't seen a lot lately, but, I mean, I love the trend. I feel like right now, we're so, slashers are, I think, the curve right now. I can't wait to see the new Halloween. How does everyone feel about that? That's how do you feel about that?
I think it's going to be good. And I'm really proud of Ryan for it, because he produced it, so.
We love you, Ryan. Even though your ass isn't here.
Yeah. That's right. None of them showed up with me. All right?
Well, I think that it will change the face of where we are right now.
I hope so.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm super excited. I feel like something magical is going to happen with that one.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
And by the way, Friday night, because Amanda is sitting across from the Severn Films table. And if you listen to the show, you know how much I love Severn Films. But those movies are not for the average person. And so she wanted recommendations. So I walked over and tried in great detail to explain things like Burial Ground and The Devil's Honey and all that. So I think you're going to pick up some Severn Films this weekend, right?
I am. I'm going to pick up a few. And he's the best movie... he's the best person. I wish Blockbuster was here, and we could just go, and he can tell you about every movie, and he describes them so beautifully, and he gets passionate, and his hands are going, and he's like,
I'm Italian,
yeah, this
I can't
one.
Help but no, talk like yeah. this.
He's like, no, this one, because, and oh my gosh, it was fantastic. That was probably more fun than actually watching the movies this thing. But I'm going to pick
well,
up
I appreciate that. We'll probably wrap up in a few minutes, but you know, it's a little awkward doing a podcast because and getting questions from the audience because they can't hear you. So if anyone has questions, I will repeat it into the mic for either of these yeah. lovely ladies. Don't be shy, because obviously we're all friends. Right here?
Oh, this is for Amanda. What are your thoughts on the new Nightmare on Elm
Street movie? Oh boy. What are your thoughts on the new Nightmare on Elm Street movie that you probably haven't seen, the remake?
And there's my answer. No, I have not seen it. Although I love the actors that are in that movie. I think they're all really good actors. I just kind of felt like it didn't need to be remade. And I don't know. Robert's my Uncle Robert. And I just feel like, I don't know. I didn't have any interest. But interestingly enough, because I get asked that question a lot, and it's very polarizing, because literally 50% of the people liked it and thought that it was interesting, and the people that don't like it are just, you know, vehemently opposed to it. I think that it was weird timing to remake it, because we had just come out with the Blu-rays and the re-release and stuff, and I don't know. I hear that they're making another one. I don't know. I've heard rumblings. I don't know.
I don't think so.
It didn't come out very well. I mean, I don't mean the movie, because I haven't seen it, but the experience of it.
If you've never listened to Shockwaves before, a couple of episodes ago, I can't remember the number, but we had Brad Fuller from Platinum Dunes on, and I did not let him off the hook about it on Elm Street. So you should go back and listen to that episode. He was super candid and completely admits that it didn't come out the way they hoped. So...
Can I say something?
Yes.
Because I stalk Felissa.
Don't we all join the club?
She just finished this amazing movie that I can't wait to see. Called
Which one?
Killer Rose.
Killer Rose.
Thank you. This is like my heart. It's like I actually gave birth to this film.
It had to be about you, right? Because it's called Killer Rose.
You know what's so weird? So a producer friend of mine said, hey, so I want to make a movie with you, really long story short. What would you want to do? I want to do like a grindhouse, you know, fucking badass. I want to be Kill Bill. And so he's like, okay. And the script was done in 24 hours. I read it. I was in love with it. I said, let's do it. And we did it. And I am incredibly proud of this movie. Like I've never, the way I could compare it to my children. I'm that proud. Wow. Like I'd never held a gun. I went shooting. I was like, fucking a different zone with my person. Sorry, I can see
it. It's all right. I
think
now.
It's fantastic. I can't wait to see
coming
it.
Out.
And Carolyn Williams is in it as well.
Yeah, she plays my sidekick, Becky, the owner of the strip club. Yeah.
And Gabrielle Stone.
And Gabrielle Stone is in it. Dave Sheridan, you know, Officer Doofy. He plays my nemesis in the film. He looks incredible with the handlebar mustache.
He was great in Victor Crowley, too.
He's fantastic. Yeah, a lot of great friends in that film. So thank you.
Are you just wrapping that up? Is that coming out soon?
Just
or are you figuring
last
out distribution?
Week, and it will be out probably like spring 2019.
Cool. Any other audience questions? Straight back there, sir. The question was, how many times?
Oh my gosh, if I had $2 for every time someone says, I want my $2, it would be fantastic. I know, I get that, and do you mind if I take Beth out?
I love that. And bless you, but we met for coffee recently, and she entered. We took a photo, and I hashtagged it. You know, do you mind if I take Beth out? I couldn't help myself.
No, it was awesome. If anybody follows Rob on social media, he does thinking poses, and they're literally my favorite. And every time
it is me questioning every decision in my life.
I know. So he takes photos of himself thinking, and I'm obsessed with them. I don't know why. I think they're fantastic. So every time I see one, I'm like, heart, 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 heart. I know. So every now and then he'll be like, Amanda, because he's thinking and I haven't noticed. He'll be like, and they're like this. He's just like.
To clarify, they're Instagram stories, so they don't last. And I don't have to remember how, like, whatever crazy thing I was thinking about at the time. But I did have one that's saved on my Instagram, which is you were like, I want to do a thinking video with you.
I did. So, I made him do one with me.
So there's a permanent thinking video of the two of us.
And we're both like.
Yeah, we can do that.
Sure.
Any more questions from the audience? Straight back there. Hi.
Thank you, everyone, for coming out. How does it feel to be part of one of the most phenomenal and horror franchises ever? But not only that, like, they're significant in the horror genre, but they're just aside really, really good movies. How does it feel to have fans come up to you and cry and reminisce about how important these movies are to them?
The question was, how does it feel to be part of such significant franchises and have really emotional fans tell you their experiences about it? They're even so polite, they won't even talk over each other.
I treat Felissa with utmost respect. You know, I'm in awe and grateful and feel like I really drew a lucky card with some movies from the 80s. And I really love that people want to tell me their stories. And I feel like it's part of the gift of having been in those movies that I get to connect with people on many different levels and have really random emotional conversations with total strangers. And I leave feeling like I have more people in my world. And I just feel really grateful, super grateful.
Felissa?
I can't even believe I'm here. Come on now. it's just extraordinary. I mean, it's like, it's so nice to be able to meet every person and just kind of connect with something that you absolutely love, you know? Because I meet people, when I met Amanda, when I meet, you know, Kane or Dee or whoever, it's like, I freak out, you know? It's such a great thing. And I don't know. Just like Amanda, I feel incredibly grateful. I thank you. There's nothing better than to feel connection with people. And we're in, like I said, we're in this together. And thank you so much from my heart. Like, really appreciate it.
Thank you guys all so much for coming down for this live Shockwaves. I was really nervous about it because my co-host didn't make it, but Felissa and Amanda were really kind to jump on board at last minute notice. And it means a lot to me that all you guys came. We still got a few more hours of this convention, so please go say hello to them. And thank you so much. We'll see you hopefully next year.
Thank you, Rob G. We love Rob G. He's an extraordinary talent and person.
Fangoria is back. Resurrected just in time for this Halloween, the magazine that set the standard is coming back as a deluxe 100-page quarterly edition. You'll see some familiar names like Michael Gingold and Tony Timpone, and you'll see bylines that will leave your jaw on the floor. Set visits, deep dives, new discoveries, fiction and exclusive artwork, and minimal ads, all printed on collectible-grade paper stock that reimagines the classic magazine for a 2018 audience. Specific contents are being kept under wraps for now because Fangoria wants you to experience true analog nostalgia when you open that black poly bag and see what's inside for the very first time. But it's not just a magazine anymore. Fangoria is also bringing you novels under its Fangoria Presents label, both Our Lady of the Inferno by Preston Fossil and My Pet Serial Killer by Michael Seidlinger arrive this September. Fango is also getting in the movie biz. Fangoria will be bringing you some amazing gnarly horror movies starting this August. That's when Puppet Master The Littlest Rites drops. Starring Thomas Lennon, Barbara Crampton, Udo Kier, and Michael Parr, with effects by the great Tate Steinsick, this reboot is nasty, hilarious, and super gory. It's been blowing minds at film fests all year and will be hitting theaters and VOD on August 17th. Next year, Fangl will be bringing to life the Grady Hendrix script Satanic Panic and a reimagining of Castle Freak. But it all starts with the mag. So head over to Fangoria.com, where you will find the most non-website-looking website ever, and subscribe to Fangoria. New issues drop in October, January, April, and July. A subscription is $60 and will save you about $20 off the cover price. That's Fangoria.com. Subscribe now. Today's episode of Shockwaves is sponsored by Diabolik DVD, featuring demented discs from all over the world. Check them out online at www.diabolikdvd.com. They are the number one source for horror, cult, and strange films from around the world. The company is Movie Buff owned and operated. And if you are looking for rare, unique, and strange films, then you need to head over to Diabolik DVD. They're constantly updating their inventory and have plenty of movies that you won't find anywhere else. They recently revamped their website, and ordering has never been easy. Right now, Diabolik has a sale on all Doppelganger label titles going on through the end of July. They also have all the Vestron titles, including the brand new Beyond Reanimator and Dagon releases. Plus, they've got Severin's limited edition Blu-ray release of The Changeling. They also have tons of titles from Agfa, Code Red, Scorpion Releasing, Arrow Video, Vinegar Syndrome, and much more. The Shockwaves team loves them, so head over to Diabolik DVD now. That's www.diabolikdvd.com or find them on Facebook. Shockwaves is also thrilled to announce that we are going to be at Midsummer Scream Convention in Long Beach on July 28th and 29th. We'll be doing a live show there with the amazing Tom Holland on the 29th. Plus, there are actual haunts, walkthrough setup, Slashback video returns, Dead Right horror trivia, some amazing celebrity guests, and much more. For info, please head to midsummerscream.org, and we hope to see you in Long Beach, California.